Kaya, Wanju, hello, welcome to another episode of The Curb. I'm Andrew F. Pierce, and this is the podcast where I bring you in-depth interviews with filmmakers, creatives, and curators of culture. This podcast is recorded in Boorloo, Western Australia, sovereignty never ceded. If there's a minor blessing that has emerged from the pandemic, it's in the way that film festivals have shifted and persisted with online options. As one of the leading film festivals in the world, the Sundance Film Festival continues to bring selections of their festival to global audience via their online and in-person screening events. The 2025 festival is currently underway, with online screenings taking place from January 30 to February 3rd. I mention this as one of the values of being able to attend the festival remotely is that I can stay safe as a disabled immunocompromised person. It also then means I can watch films like Mindy Lind and Megan Griffith's superb animated short, View from the Floor. This 5-minute documentary tells Mindy's story as a musician, a writer, a director, and as someone who lives with disability. Mindy doesn't have any legs, and while she gets around in a wheelchair, it's that view from the floor that she's forced to present on television when she becomes a guest on the Maury Povich show. With a comedic and open narration, Mindy takes viewers from her initial perspective of being invited on the show. Keep in mind, this is in the era before the Who's Your Baby's Dad reveals dominated the show, to the feeling that she had when the producers asked her to go on stage without a wheelchair. View from the Floor is decisively and intimately a great film that unpacks the concept of inspiration porn, which leads to a further discussion about the exploitation of disabled folks, especially in relation to entertainment. As co-directors, Mindy and Megan utilise the bright and expressive animation from Joe Garber to bring a sense of comedy and charm to Mindy's story, allowing non-disabled and disabled folk alike to understand how inspiration porn impacts everyone's lives. In the following interview, Mindy and Megan talk about how they met through the late great filmmaker Lynn Shelton, and how Mindy deals with catcalls and more. The importance of telling stories of disability and being able to reach a global audience like me here in Perth, Western Australia is also discussed, alongside how they created the look and the sound of the film. Before Mindy closes the chat with an interesting fact about the person who played E.T. on set. To help support Mindy and Megan in transforming View from the Floor into a feature film, please visit viewfromthefloor.com. I'll stick a link in the show notes. You can also donate on that site while also checking out the artwork for the short film and also listening to Mindy's song as heard in the film too. Equally, if you want to find out what we do on The Curb, then please head over to thecurb.com.au. We are a completely independent and ad-free website that lives on the support of listeners and readers just like yourself. So if you can, please head over to patreon.com/thecurbau to sort of support our work from as little as $1 a month. Right, for now, here is a clip from View from the Floor, followed by my interview with Mindy Lind and Megan Griffiths.
People just really don't understand disability. There are so many parts of CRIP identity that are being undervoiced. And the antithesis, to me, is telling real stories, acknowledging an anti-hero, someone who didn't make it perfectly through the whole thing, or someone who doesn't know it all yet, or someone who's hurt and messed up from disabilities, but not in the ways that you're used to hearing about that. Maybe somebody who's empowered by it, someone who's taking advantage of it in all the good ways and maybe some of the sneaky bad ways. I think it's about time that we start talking about all those really real things that we haven't talked about yet with disability.
Thank you so much to you both for both giving me the time to be able to talk about your work and your film. It's like this wonderful short, and I would love to talk about the journey through getting it made, but I'm also curious about the future of it too. So I guess I'd love to start about talking about Megan and Mindy, how you both met each other and decided that this was a project that you wanted to work on together.
Megan, I'll go for it. So we were introduced by a filmmaker named Lynn Shelton, who was a mutual friend of both of ours almost 10 years ago. And she knew that Mindy was looking to make a project about her life, and she thought I would be a good fit to help make that happen. And then we've just formed this beautiful friendship in the ensuing 10 years while we've been working on different versions of what this could be. And then a couple years ago, we decided kind of, we just came together and said, this feels like maybe we've been kind of barking up the wrong tree and what we should be doing is a documentary, and that what would open up a lot of possibility would be if it was an animated documentary. So we've been working on the feature version of that, and this is a 5-minute excerpt that we pulled from the feature audio and animated to show what we were planning to do for the feature, and then realized as sort of along the way that it was a standalone short film on its own, and started submitting it to festivals, and then we're thrilled to get this news that we would premiere it at Sundance.
Congratulations. Mindy, do you want to add to that as well?
That's a great answer, Megan.
Like the shortest version I've ever said.
Oh, I think that's fully encompassing answer to that question. Sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, as you mentioned, Lynn Shelton, huge, huge part of American independent cinema. Her impact must have, you know, it lingered. Was there kind of this sense of, maybe duty is not the right term, but like honoring who she is as a filmmaker and being able to continue her legacy in, you know, saying she brought you two together. We've got to at least, you know, honor her in some way to be able to continue on that way.
I mean, Megan was one of Lynn's best friends. So I feel like just in general, that general feeling of like, you know, I don't want to speak for you, but you guys work together so much. And I just feel like she was already inspiring you as an artist.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think at this point, everything anyone does in Seattle film particularly is probably, you know, at least informed and influenced by Lynn, if not directly, you know, honoring her. But this, I think we have had her in our minds as, you know, we want to make sure she's, she would be proud of what we're doing. And I think she would be.
She did put us together, and she, I mean, we've become best friends as well. So I just feel like there's a spark of magic there as well. We have like our birthdays are one day apart. She really did like work a lot of magic in putting us together.
It sounds like kismet in a way, and the relationship that you both have is clear on screen. Obviously, it's an animated film, but there is so much of the trust and the relationship that is built up with you both in being able to tell somebody's story and being giving it space as well. And Mindy, I'm curious if you can talk about, you know, building that trust with Megan and being able to go, like, as you're saying, the different iterations of the story, whether it was a script or anything like that, but making sure that Megan was the right person to trust to tell your story.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've just kind of built this friendship around how we're going to tell this story. And so there has been, I mean, I really like to tell my story. and I tell it in a cool way. But I do think that Megan and I have had the time to, like, build a common language around these experiences in a way that, like, could reach a wide audience. And so, like, we went in there with all the trust and friendship that we have and with that in mind and, like, that common goal. Yeah, it's weird. I don't remember a time where it wasn't Megan who was going to be telling the story with me.
And I just want to also say, I mean, it is such a collaboration. Like, it is, you know, we're both directing this, and it's, you know, we're both bringing all these things to the table, you know, that together it makes this, I think, this kind of beautiful whole, with the W, not with the H-O-L-E. I'm like really honored to be part of the project and trusted by Mindy, and I just really am excited about what it has generated, this, and it's always nice to hear from anyone who he hasn't met us yet and just listened or watched the piece to that translates, that feeling of like trust and intimacy and all that has built over the years. I feel like I really feel it when I listen to it. And so it's always nice to know that it is heard and felt by other people. Cause I think it's one of the strengths of the project is that by listening to Mindy tell this story to me, everyone gets to listen to Mindy's story as if they're her friend. And I think that makes it just so accessible, and it just is so invites you in as an audience member.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Like, one of the things which I've written down is that specificity breeds familiarity and understanding. And there is, like, your story is a personal story, Mindy, but there is a universality to it, which is so important, especially for the disabled community. And, like, I'm part of the disabled community, but my disability is invisible. So I don't have the same conversations that you would have. And yet this is a great conversation piece. Like, we at work, we had a sunflower day the other week to recognize hidden disabilities and stuff, and we're given lanyards and all this kind of stuff, and then, you know, walking around and people like, oh, I didn't realize that you were disabled, and then asking similar questions that you talk about in the film. And I'm like, gosh, it is a strange experience to be able to hear it and be put into words in a way that is not, again, like, you're talking about inspiration porn in a way, and it's like, oh gosh, all right, well, how are we actually dealing with that in a way that is practical and cutting through? And specificity breeds and, you know, grows that familiarity.
Well, speaking of Lynn Shelton, that's her piece of advice. She gave me two pieces of advice for filmmaking, and that was one, which is, and its specificity is universal, like, really tell the truth. You know, like, because that's going to hit more people. Not really. And her other piece of advice was take walks, which I heeded and love that piece of advice. Yeah, that's really interesting, because there is so many through lines, I think, with disability through the invisible or apparent and non-apparent communities, and things that we just don't experience that the others do. But I think that there's people who are in the non-disabled community who totally, like, can understand this and also can, like, have some sort of, like, you know, spectrum of, being very close to something like that. We all have these things that we get called out for, and it's really interesting, I think, specific to disability.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, cat calls is usually what I call them. It's like the things that people shout out at you that are, like, very disability specific, you know, like, instead of a cat call being like, hey mama, it would be more like, how do you fuck or whatever, or can I help you, or, you know.
And but both of those are in such a broad, like, spectrum, like, how do you fuck to how can I help you, like, they sit on the same balance, but it's like, can you just not? And that's what I really appreciate. I'm curious, like, that the extended version of this, the feature version, will no doubt go into that a little bit more. But the openness that you had that conversation.
Yeah, that's what I'm most excited about, is really, like, this piece talks about confronting your own internalized ableism. You know, there's a part of that that we are, like, that part of our identity, you know, that it is something that you identify with and you want to show off and use it. And then part of it is like, how dare you look at me in this way? And anyways, confronting your own ableism, whether it's coming from others or yourself, I think is a really interesting path to a person with a disability's life. And as I get older, that's what's been happening. So that's what the movie ultimately is about.
Yeah. And I think that is, like, speaking of, like, something specific that feels universal. I think there's probably, I don't know that there's anyone in the world who doesn't have something that they feel judged by that they also judge themselves for harshly in a way that they probably shouldn't be, and have to reckon with the way you're agreeing with something you don't want to agree with in the world and how that's affecting how you put yourself out there. I think it's really just an interesting conversation to have, regardless of whether it's about specifically disability, which in this case, that's what we're talking about, but it just is so relatable, I think, outside of that very, you know, very specific experience.
Example, I think needing help is a huge part of the disability experience, whether or not people see you having help, think you need help, whether or not you actually do need help and are getting that help. And so for me, I've done a lot of, I don't need help, when in fact I did, but I didn't want people to think that I needed help, because there's this, like, this huge responsibility to uphold that, like, disability isn't exactly what you think it is. And so you internalize all of that stuff. Needing help is bad. I'm a super crip, you know, and I have to wear a cape every day or be exceptional, in order to have value. And I think that this piece touches on it just just a little bit, which is really exciting to see. And I think it really gets at the exploitation piece and the imposter syndrome. And it's got Maury and, you know, ER, George Clooney, just all the best stuff from the 90s. Yeah.
I mean, if we can talk maybe about the animation for a moment then, because that's obviously a huge aspect of it. And Joe's expressive animation is so beautiful, specifically like that shot of George and the hearts and everything, like there's this beauty there, right?
Yeah. That was like the shot I saw from the beginning. I was like, and he's got a wink and like a ding, you know, yeah.
Can you talk about building the creative view of the film with Joe and making sure that there was that kind of comedic aspect there, but also making sure that your vision, Mindy, is presented in a way that you see yourself in there, even if it is your story?
Yeah, I mean, Megan and I sat down with the audio and we're like, we see this, we see that. And a lot of this stuff that happened, which is really great because you can like actually, you know, pull from footage, but Joe's got his own style. It's really amazing. We came to him, but we came to him with very specific ideas, not just for scenes, but like for the colors, for example, and like a lot of the magical realism stuff. But he came to it really like naturally, and he's such a joy to collaborate with because I think that he jumped in with that common language, which is, you know, there was a picture of me in a band uniform being interviewed by a news crew, and he took that and he created that exploitive sort of thematic still from the thing, which is that like you get what exploitation is in a thing that you wouldn't be able to do through live action. So animation proves to be this like wonderful tool for showing things like that, and also being able to explore me as a youth and all my different iterations of ability and adaptive ability. But the colors came from us, the and Joe as a collaboration. But I think, I don't know. Megan, did you want to add anything?
I think there's something about animation that lets you kind of transcend like a whatever you could do in a non-animation. What's that called?
Live action.
That's the word I'm looking for. Yeah. In live action, we're both a little punchy right now. And I think that, you know, having that sea of eyeballs, like people whose entire head is an eyeball, like that being the audience just says a lot. That piece, and then having the news crews where their heads are cameras or their full head is a microphone. You know, it's just, I think it just conveys something that's really hard to convey, but it's so easily digested when it's given to you in that form. So yeah, I think that it just the using this form just it's opened up a lot of opportunities for us, and Joe is so great.
And then the sound is so fun. So we got to put in the song that I created, actually called View from the Floor. It's this kind of no leg anthem that I had written and love, and use that sort of as the guide for this piece, as well as just auditory. It's a really playful melody to it, and thoughtful and simple and cute and pretty. And then we bring in a Foley artist who's also a homie of ours, and we got to collaborate with him, and he's a ball of laughs, and really get practical and silly. Just the moments of humor that we're able to come out is really fun, because we're all like, you know, we're fun people, and sometimes this can be kind of serious stuff. And I feel like it added a level of like, we love hearing laughs when people watch it. And, you know, the
people open up when they're laughing. They like, they're really receptive when they're laughing, I feel like. So it's really good to be able to get, you know, get that response going and then give them all sorts of good information that they can take out into the world.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that kind of leads into the notion that for non-disabled people, these kinds of discussions can be really difficult to have because they don't sometimes know how to approach it. And so through comedy, that might be a way of approaching it. Was that something that you were conscious of?
Definitely. Yeah. I think it's just like a natural part of how I speak. And then, you know, we speak together. It's just like, it's all, you know, dramedy, is that what it is? It's all like wonderful and sad at the same time and hilarious, and you know, so yeah, comedy is kind of like, I'm glad that it was really exciting to see that come out of it, because that is such a huge part of like who I am. So to see the comedy and hear people laugh at this thing, it's been really cool. And I think that the sound really did. We had so much fun doing the sound too. We were like with the pickles, like we didn't want to hear like a real water. We wanted to hear like bloop, 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 you know, like that kind of sound. And it made us crack up, and people are, it's, I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's beautiful.
It still makes me laugh. Yeah.
Some of the sound makes me crack up. I can't, wait to do more.
Yeah. So I'm excited to see what what you build in that soundscape for the feature, because there is the possibilities, and that's the thing. It's like visuals and sound can really draw out those emotions in a way that just a story, maybe it can still do it, but it not in the same level that you really want to hit home something to. As we're talking about, obviously this is going to be screening at Sundance, and Sundance, I've been lucky enough to be able to attend Sundance remotely for the past few years, and that's been a really great accessibility thing for me, because then I get to talk to filmmakers like yourselves, but also I get to watch a bunch of films from disabled filmmakers about the disabled community, and my experience has been greatly enriched because of that, of being able to watch them. And then I'm curious what that means for you as a filmmaker, you know, telling these stories and being able to share it with the world on that level. Sundance is kind of opening that up to you both. What's that like? What's that mean?
I mean, it means the world. It's kind of, the goal is to have more real stories about disability for wide audiences, because it's going to make our lives better. Those with disability, if we just get more stories out there that are nuanced and complex and, you know, awesome in a different way, like that's, we got to do it through wide audiences. And so Sundance is definitely like a really positive step in that direction. Ultimately, we're trying to get this film that we're currently making funded as well, so like that is another additional positive of it being landing in a lot of people's laps. But I just think disability specifically is like 20%, 25% of the population in a lot of places, and we're just massively under voice misrepresented, and we all know that there's real stories, and for some reason they're really hard to tell. I don't know, it's like, even me as a person with a disability, like, you know, in some way, like you were saying earlier, I tell Megan that it's hard. You really can't offend the people with legs when telling this story. There is this line, and I think the solution is telling the truth. Obviously, that's where we've landed. More people to hear stories that are new, fresh.
100%. Yeah. And I, you know, I believe film builds empathy. That's the reason I work in this field. And so any opportunity to build empathy for people who aren't being represented properly is, I mean, honestly, every story that is from a new voice is something that deserves that full experience, you know? And so, and we're trying to make this project, the short and the feature, for a worldwide audience. So to know that it's reaching already, just to know that it's reached you in Australia and resonated with you is so meaningful. And so just, you know, thinking about the fact that the online version of Sundance can reach so far is kind of blowing my mind. I honestly hadn't even really imagined how far this would allow it to reach, because Sundance didn't used to have the online component. So that's relatively new and very exciting.
That's so cool.
Yeah. I mean, it's like on a selfish manner, it's very cool, because I get to watch stuff that I, you know, can then champion and carry forth. But it's also, yeah, building that wider community globally. It's been a real treat to be able to talk with you both. I'm super excited about what you get to do with this film, where it goes. Please let me know what you do, whether, you know, the feature film aspects and stuff. I'd love to support it however I can from all the way down here in Australia.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, well,
and thank you again for the film. Thank you again for your time. It's generous that on what a Tuesday evening.
You.
It's great. Yeah.
Thank you for your interest and for sharing. It's so cool. We really appreciate it. And I want to tell you, you have ET back there.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I've got two ETs actually.
Do you know that he was played by a disabled young kid with no legs?
I didn't.
On a skateboard.
Wow. There you go. That's part of film history I didn't know. Thank you. Yeah.
Isn't that cool? Just Google it. It looks so cool.
I will, definitely. I will say, I have all this stuff behind me, and it's more just because that's literally what my room looks like. But I've been quite interested in the conversations that have come out of it. Like, people have told me different stories because they've seen something. So it's great. I didn't expect it to ever be a conversation piece or to learn something about ET. So I appreciate it. Thanks, Mindy.
You got it.
Yeah. Awesome.
Okay, well, we'll talk soon.
We'll do.
Keep in touch.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you so
much.
Thank
you. Hey, thanks for listening to this interview with Mindy Lind and Megan Griffiths. If you're curious, Matthew Demerit was one of the actors who played E.T. on set. And additionally, if you're also attending Sundance in person, please check out View from the Floor, which is screening as part of the documentary short film program, or watch it online from the 30th of January to the 3rd of February. All the details are available via sundance.org. Thanks again to Mindy and Megan for the chat, and I'll see you on the next one.